Welcome to Star Party, an astrology and tarot podcast that serves up both soulful evolution and bedazzled celebration. I'm astrologer and hypnotist Sandy Citron.
And I'm astrologer and tarot reader Bess Matassa. We're so glad you're here. Let's get the party started.
Hey, Star Party people. It's me, Sandy, and I'm here with Bess. Hi, Bess.
Hi.
So we are really excited to talk about hope today, about gaining some momentum and moving forward in our lives. But really, we're going to break it down much more than that. So Bess, what are your kind of initial thoughts about hope?
Well, you know, to be frank, I feel like this episode, I really, really need it right now. It's like a self-medication, not in the, you know, the complicated context we often think of when we hear the word self-medicated. But yeah, I'm hoping there's some medicine here that both the hosts and the listeners can enjoy. I've been feeling, you know, frankly, I've been feeling not very hopeful lately. I've been pretty kind of bottomed out in my own experience. And so it's been a topic that's definitely been firing for me in terms of where to go in the astrological chart and where to go in the tarot to seed this sensation of renewal. And when I was first feeling into this topic, I kept, as you know, is sometimes my custom, I kept hearing a song in my mind, and it even like woke me up in the middle of the night the other night. And I was like, shit, like what does this have to do with hope? But it's that Phil Collins, like very grim divorce song called Against All Odds, you know, take a look at me now. I'm just an empty space. Yeah.
I love that song.
You coming back to me is against all odds. And that's what I have to face. Yeah. So what does that have to do with hope and hopelessness? And I don't want to at all imply that hope has to be born out of hopelessness. But when I was really feeling into the sensation, I was ruminating on this sense that there's a kind of emptying and a kind of softening that I think that begets hope, that it's hard to sort of hope. I mean, we can do it, but it's hard to hope sometimes in a way that's sustainable when we're just sort of pushing on in the momentum of something, you know, versus sort of having a moment to kind of gather that softness or gather that sense of like something. And I don't mean emptying, like being empty or not coming to a situation fully, but there's something about sort of the soft animal of hope, like the soft sort of feathering component. And sometimes that happens out of perceived hopelessness, you know, where then we sort of reach this point where we are able to somehow seed and be like, okay, I can step into the flow of life again. And sometimes that happens even just from like a sort of a releasing of a grip of the way all of like the particulars of how the thing is going to like manifest or come into being. And I think this is something that we talked about, you know, with some of the tarot cards over the past few weeks too, that kind of like releasing of the how it's going to happen. And for me, the hope, like hope in a very pure essentialized form, doesn't rest in a how. It rests in a sort of availability and a sort of emptiness. So I feel like this is sort of one of the reasons I was hearing this Phil Collins song, because there's a certain, he's like coming, dropping down and in that song. And not that we have to go again to hopelessness to beget hope, but there's a sort of emptying that happens in, you know, the vibration of that song. And I think that's where I've been ruminating, because at first I was like, hope, yeah, renewal, push it, pump it, cardinal energy, like all this kind of like hyper penetrative energy. And as I really got into it, I was like, wow, no, I actually feel like it comes from a much softer place. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does make sense. It's kind of the opposite of what I was thinking, because I was thinking about it as more of a Mars type of energy, which is, you know, momentum, drive, going for it, putting your all into it, which is how I feel when I get really excited about something that I think is probable or that I think I have a goal, and I get into like this cardinal state. I'm really a cardinal person, and I get like, I'm going to do it. And then for as long as that energy lasts, that hopefulness kind of really fuels me. And I think that there is this side of it that's momentum And Mars was going to be one of my snacks until I remember that we only each get one snack. So I'm not using Mars as my snack.
Don't have a snack attack, Sandy.
So I think it's appropriate to kind of talk about that part of hope here. And I think they can both exist together. You know, they're different, maybe different phases or stages of the same kind of energy, like that kind of softening, making yourself empty. And, you know, if you think about hope as related to grief, you know, or maybe something isn't working or something we're losing, with grief, we do have to really let go and we have to kind of just be and accept before that next flood of maybe that Mars energy would to rush in.
Yeah.
So I think we've both kind of touched on something about it that, you know, kind of maybe exists in like its own moments in a way.
Yeah, that flood. I love that image. It actually is putting me in the mind of the Five of Cups in the tarot, you know, which is ruled by Mars and Scorpio, interestingly. You know, so there's this feeling of like both a penetrative energy, you know, a feeling of like, what is the next thing? Let's, you know, plunge ahead, but also like a letting to be flooded almost, you know, and I don't know. It's a hard sensation to describe. But yeah, I think that there's this dual action that sometimes happens, and we can find like, we can almost locate ourselves on that continuum. Are we in a place of sort of emptying to beget the flood, or are we caught in the momentum of the unfolding, you know? And it's interesting.
Right. And there's something interesting. There's something interesting here.
So fascinated by this conversation.
About uncertainty, you know, because uncertainty is a fact of life. It's just imbued in everything that we do. And we're always kind of coming up against it in different ways. Either we're super conscious of it, either it's scaring us or we don't care about it or whatever our relationship with it is in any given moment. Hope kind of lives maybe counter to it, or it's kind of like, it's something that we can cultivate to work with uncertainty. It's also something that we might kind of need to cultivate when we're faced with too much uncertainty, you know, where we're just like, I'm going to choose to have hope. I'm just going to choose it right now, you know? And it's, I don't know exactly where it lives in relation to uncertainty, but I think it's like either a strategy or it's an emotional response, or it's like a cognitive response that we try to create to choose this other way. You know, and it's different from optimism, I think, as well, where it's like optimism is just like kind of a setting, maybe. I don't know if I agree with that, but it can sometimes be like super improbable. And hope, I think maybe we might feel is like more probable, or we can be like this specific thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. And there's something about that uncertainty. I like how you're bringing that up. It's putting me in the mind of sort of like, yes, anyway, you know, this kind of feeling of like, who the fuck knows, but all right, like, okay, you know, and that takes an enormous amount of like wherewithal and courage and all sorts of emotional, you know, sort of backdrops to the saying like, okay again, you know, and I think that really it speaks to that martial tone that you're bringing to it too. And like the cardinal signs, you know, energies too, the sense of like, begin again, you know?
I think, you know, most of us through this last year with COVID have been so uncertain, you know, you can't really plan anything. And it was an interesting year when thinking about hope, because for a lot of things, we had to put hope kind of away on a little shelf, you know, in like small ways and also in big ways, depending on how we were being affected or what was happening or what, you know, external limitations we were up against. And I think that was like really different, you know, I don't think in my life I've ever had a year where I've had to be like, well, can't hope for this or can't hope for that, you know, or I can't like fill in any of the normal things that would fill in. It was just like, just wait, just sit.
Yeah.
Very, very unique.
Yeah. And it wasn't, it opened us up, or opened many of us up too, to a kind of hoping that I think is in some ways very radical. That's not goal driven. That's not that's not linear. That's just about like holding this kind of wideness around the yesness of like we want to still be here in this experience. Yeah. And, you know, less than like, okay, I'm going to hope for this thing, or I'm going to hope for, you know, it was like this kind of fuzzy, very fuzzy, soft-edged hope of just like, okay, like I'm still going to be in the flux of life here. You know?
I did read a blog post before this recording to educate myself about hope. Oh. A whole blog post, Bess.
A whole blog post.
And they had mentioned what you're talking about, and it's called transcendent hope, which is like just this kind of the goal of the hope doesn't have to be specific. It's like this kind of floaty, open, I believe that we can transcend.
Yeah. I feel like I'm sort of wired more into the floaty hope. I don't really associate hope a lot, even like pre-pandemic, with like goals very much in my life. And I've kind of questioned that sometimes. I've been like, well, what would it be like to sort of harness those things a little more and be a little bit more sort of in the track of like hoping in the line of something that like I'm able to sketch out a little more? And what would that look like? You know, but it feels very vague and sort of, transcendent to me sometimes. It's just like the againness of things, like the participatory yes to it. I don't know.
I'm so attached to the goals kind of hope. Yeah. Like that really drives me. Maybe it's because I have Saturn on the midheaven or something where it's like, it must be this step.
And I guess Saturn in the 12th. It makes sense.
Oh, that's interesting. I would have never thought of Saturn as a hope
monitor
until this moment.
This is a whole other like B-side snack we got to think about.
We might have too many snacks. We're gonna get full.
So full. Just gorge ourselves on hope. Well, should we get into our little snack packs?
Absolutely.
I've got an unlikely snack to bring to the table.
I knew you were gonna have an unlikely.
You know I love an unlikely snack, but this one actually really like kind of shocked me. Like I had like my notion of what I thought, you know, and then it really, I was like, wait a minute, you're in this experience right now. You're attempting to connect to hope, you know, not to get too into my own personal narrative, but I've been having a really tough couple of months just feeling in a bit of a trough, not really connected to transcendent hope or goal-driven hope or any real flavor of it. Just sort of a creative dip or a trough in the landscape. And, you know, astrologically, not that this is the only thing happening, but, you know, my moon in Leo has been getting kind of pummeled by Saturn, the Saturn opposition. And, I've just been, our moon is a really sensitized place in our chart. It's, you know, a place in many ways that we go to be protected and protect ourselves. And so it's felt very raw and exposed, and like this place in me that I'm usually able to sort of self-seed, you know, that process of hope has been kind of cut off or challenged in some way. And I had this feeling, you know, when I was like ruminating on this podcast and just, you know, feeling into like, well, how do I actually activate this principle in this moment? And I had this phrase come to me like, your Leo moon is both the problem. It's not a problem. I don't mean that in a binary way, but the problem and the solution. And I was like, what does that mean? And then I was like, wait a minute. It's that the hope can often be found in the same space where we feel hopeless. It's like the place where we're sort of bottomed out and emptied and feel like we're getting undernourished, or we're not, you know, we're deprived or whatever the sense is. That's exactly what needs to be fit, or like is where we can seed it. And that sounds a bit abstract, but what I mean by that, and so the snack that came out was actually the moon. And I was like, whoa, like what is that all about? And I was thinking like the moon is the sense in us that if we wait for it, it'll change. You know, we all have a kind of internal lunar cycle, you know, dependent on our moon sign, its aspects. We have our own internal rhythm with how our emotions ebb and flow, how that landscape shifts in us. And, you know, outside of even just the collective moon cycle, which of course is also a beautiful thing to sync up with, we all have our ways, you know? And I was thinking about like, what is my way? And my way, Leo moon style, is to have totally solar lit, all the hope in the world for something, you know, all the clouds obscured or, you know, banished from the sky, and then to have total cloud cover. And to feel like everything has gone away, you know, and the sun is gone, you know? And so I was like, okay, like, can I even just start from that place of peace around that that cycle in myself that reseeds hope and that feeling of like, okay, it's a little extreme in me sometimes, you know, and we kind of swing, and then we kind of swing back, and how to caretake around that swing. And then also how to use that, how to harness the energy of that moon to step back into the current of life, because the moon is in many ways our connection to the variegated terrain of emotions, you know, to shiftiness, to how things kind of come together and fall apart and come together and fall apart. It is, regardless of whether we have strong water in our chart, it's our connection to, you know, the water concept or principle. And so I started to also kind of almost feel it. I've been doing this a lot with astrological placements, I think, recently, too, really starting to feel them as physical energetic currents, you know, not as personality, not as a storyline, but like, what does this kind of like feel like rock and roll through the body? And I was like just feeling into that physical experience of, you know, my moon sign being totally solar lit, totally everything is out and exposed, or totally obscured. And like, what does that kind of like, I was almost doing the motion in my body and physicalizing it. And, you know, also like, how can I seed it from the same place, not to like game face it or fake it till you make it, but what are the characteristics of my moon sign that I can also, you know, use in this moment, like, you know, not to be too didactic or reductive, but like a certain loyalty of the fixity of my Leo moon, a willingness to be like in it, you know, a kind of a closing of the gap that we talked to, like with the strength card, you know, a few weeks ago, and the connection to Leo. And how do we do that in our own charts? How do we get really close to the energetic need, close to the emptiness in that moment? And, you know, I'm talking again about situations where we might feel like we're disconnected from hope. But yeah, I kind of like, I was like, whoa, I didn't expect the moon to really step forward in this way, but it felt like that kind of current and that kind of rhythmic unfolding that we can connect to be with all the parts of like joining back up again with life, which I really associate with hope, stepping back kind of into the fray. So that's where I landed, but I'd love to hear some of your thoughts about the moon.
So before we made the recording, which was 3 minutes ago or whatever, before we started, I was like, I have no idea what to do for the hypnosis. But while you were talking, I basically created the whole hypnosis. So it's going to be totally tailored for you, Bess, course it will work for everyone. But it's so perfect because this, you know, I was really trying to figure out for myself before we started talking if hope was more emotional or more cognitive. And that's kind of maybe a dumb question, but I was interested in it. And I love this idea of the moon because it's, of course, so emotionally, it's such a thing. It's kind of showing hope as something that like kind of grows up out in an organic way from a place of emotional readiness, you know, whereas with the cognitive view of hope, it would be like, okay, you can, you know, journal about it. You can like write out all these goals for yourself and then get really hopeful about them. And I kind of agree with both. I think maybe they're both true, but I love this, you know, kind of like soft, and imagining like the primordial, like waters from which you spring with this like hopefulness. I think you're onto something here. It's hard for me to like pull apart my own moon from we've talked about this before. I'm born on a new moon and all of my planets are in the 10th house basically. So it's like, I don't know if it's my moon or my sun or my Saturn. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's something to this. I love that you're using the word organic, you know, and whatever the word organic's used in all sorts of weird contexts. But like in this sense, like being like, what is sort of the naturalness of the curvature of the spirit, you know, in this process? And, you know, I think so often, especially when we're not feeling a lot of hope, we sort of rail and struggle in that space of like, what's actually natural, you know, like rather than just taking the shape, you know, of the thing in order to beget the next shape, you know, sort of like curving our body almost like modern dance style. And I think when we look across our moons, across the elements, you know, we find that that happens in very different ways. You know, it can happen through the qualities, you know, maybe it's like if there's a cardinal moon, it is that more sort of like vigorous kind of like charge toward the hope. You know, if there's a fixity of the moon, maybe there is more of sort of this rumination or this rolling around in sort of the smut of hopelessness, roll around in the, yeah, like sniff around. And, you know, maybe if it's mutable, there's this kind of almost sparkly sort of dilated quality of just sort of catching the, you know, catching these little fragments, catching these little particles or little scraps of hope to build a whole, you know, and then across the elements too, you know. And it's funny because I think we often like veer into this territory where it's like, oh, the earth is a physical, or earth signs are physicalized experiences. And then the other signs operate in different realms. But it's interesting too to consider that there's something really physical about the moon, even though the moon is like connected traditionally with water in our mind, you know, is this tidal kind of force. There's also a physical wildness of that territory in us, a kind of organic like pulls and currents. And we're feeling, you know, it's a feel, but it's also this like, yeah, this organic kind of experience. And yeah, I don't know. I think there's a way to drop into the current, no matter our moon sign, of like, whoa, what is this rock and roll actually like doing to my energy body in this moment? You know, and maybe it's like, if you have moon in air, it's like the breath, you know, where is the breath going? And like, do I feel stifled? Can I find the spaciousness, or, you know, whatever the thing is, you know, can I feel like, where is the heat going in my body in a fire moon? You know, where is gravity going in my body in an earth moon? You know, and where are these kinds of like almost lubricated currents going in my water moon? And, you know, just sensing into that physicalized experience of the kind of the flood that we were talking about basically in the beginning, and how that manifests.
Yeah. So my very typical snack.
Typical. Like, nothing is typical.
We often go, you know, I think it's a nice partnership. Obviously, this is a nice partnership for many ways, but I think often like I kind of pick the textbook astrology, and that always pairs nicely with your kind of approach, which tends to round it out in a way that always makes a lot of sense and feels spot on, but offers this visceral kind of felt understanding of the symbol or emotion that we're talking about. So of course I went with the 11th house, which is
I had no idea. Oh. I had no idea where you're going to go. So this is not typical.
Well, when I learned astrology, I was taught that the 11th house is the house of hopes, dreams, and aspirations.
Oh yeah. Okay.
And that's how I was taught it.
Yeah.
Which sometimes I really go there when I think and teach about the 11th house, and sometimes I veer into other directions because it's such a complex space that holds community, and it holds humanitarian actions, and it holds a, you know, science and technology, and like a big kind of panned out way of thinking about the world in a conceptual way and understanding how things come together in a detached, objective way. So the 11th house is rich. I am reading this famous blog post I told you about hope. And it's called, it's on positivepsychology.com, and it's /hope-therapy. So if you want to find it. But it's interesting because when I'm reading this blog post, which is talking about the four types of hope or the four examples of hope, it makes me think, well, maybe it's actually like the 10th, 11th, and 12th houses that are kind of connected to hope. Like the 10th house would cover the example of realistic hope, which realistic hope, according to this wonderful post, is kind of like hoping for something that's really probable or really realistic. So like when I'm talking about me being like, oh, I want to hope for a specific goal, and if I can fit it in my calendar and I can think ahead to it in this kind of Capricornian, like step-by-step realistic way, where it's like, what's the plan for this year? What are you doing quarter one, quarter two? You know, okay, I'm really hopeful about these things that I'm going to bring into being. Then maybe that's more 10th house. Then the next two examples of hope are definitely 11th house to me. And those are utopian hope and chosen hope, which utopian hope is like classic 11th house. It's like this hoping for a collective better future for us all. And for people with like a strong 11th house or a strong Aquarius kind of energy in their chart, there's a real like closeness to this humanitarian driven hope. It's like, for a lot of people, that seems very abstract. Like, no, I just want to think about my personal life. But for people with this 11th house Aquarius, there's like, no, I need to believe that the world can be better, that like we can all be better together. We all belong to each other. We need to all be better, or else none of us are better. Like, if life is bad for one person, life is bad for all of us. You know, I have Mercury in the 11th house, so I definitely sit there. But it's like, you know, really creating hope. You know, I know people who have Aquarius who, you know, are really like unhopeful, you know, about the future, about the humanitarian possibility. You know, we don't have to get into the state of the world right now, I guess. Mm-hmm. We can leave that for another conversation.
We'll just say not great. Yeah.
Anyway, like, yeah, I think with 11th house and with Aquarius, you can also become like really pessimistic, because it's like, it's tough, right? It's a big dream. But when you want to connect in, like, how am I personally feeling connected to the bigger community, and how can I feel hopeful? I would look at the signs on the 11th house. I would look at the planets. I would look at the transits through the 11th house. And I think that's important for all of us, because we do all belong to each other, you know, so we're not going anywhere if we aren't all going somewhere. I think. And then the chosen hope is more of a cognitive way. Kind of, we were talking about this, like, you know, it's a little different from realistic hope, which realistic hope is like probable. And it's like, okay, this could happen and then that could happen. Whereas chosen hope is like, okay, you know, maybe I'm ill and there's no one knows what I'm sick with, but I have to have hope, because if I don't, I can't, you know, get up and brush my teeth. Like, so choosing to have hope would be like thinking your way around the barrier to like choose it, to grab it. And that feels very 11th house to me, which, you know, sometimes with this 11th house Aquarius type energy, our brain can get us there. You know, like, we have to like let our mind do the work. I once ran a marathon, and I remember like in the lead up to it, I only had like 2 months to train, and I also had to raise money so that I could do it. And so it was like a lot, you know? And in the lead up, I was like starting to get worried. And I was like, oh my God, what if I get, you know, hurt myself, or like, you know? And my friend was just like, you're going to have to like just surround yourself with white light. You're just going to have to keep telling yourself you can do this, you know, like, and just like live in that like thought. You have to like create that thought all the time. And I grabbed a lot of thoughts, you know, phrases and words that I could like hold on to. Like, one of them was, pain is not a wall. You know, and I just like, I repeated those thoughts, and I did a great job with the marathon. I was like totally fine. And I remember, you know, I'm sure I could have easily gotten injured or whatever. I'm not trying to say I got past all of it by thinking my way there. You know, I don't even know if I believe that that's true, but that's kind of easy, simple example of chosen hope. Like, I'm just going to think my way there. So the fourth one, which is the transcendent hope we were talking about earlier, this to me feels very 12th house. This is like kind of the subtle difference between the 11th house, which is like my hopes and dreams, my goals, my aspirations. I'm going to think about it. I'm going to get a cognitive grasp on it. I'm going to have words for it. I'm going to have language for it. I'm going to get other people involved. We're going to talk about it. We're going to make a mission statement. Then the 12th house is also hope, and it's also belief in possibility, but it's a faith kind of thing. It's kind of that dreamy, floaty thing we were talking about earlier. That's just the ooze that you're like laying in. That's like, I just have to feel the sense of possibility, and that there's something bigger than me, and that we're connected in a divine, you know, way with all beings, are interconnected with love. And, you know, this is the space of like, there's no words for it. You know, this is like this generalized universal kind of hope. So
I'm having so many sort of ideas firing when you're talking about this arc, you know, because I'm feeling like, you know, and not that this isn't true for other topics in astrology, certainly, but it's like there's something about hope that the whole body, the whole energy body is being invited to come with, you know, it's not like no part left behind. And it's making me think like this realistic hope, this chosen hope, these different elemental flavors almost, because I'm thinking of like even my own life. And I sort of have a tendency to swing between total transcendence and total realism, like that, whatever that sort of like buries me alive. And, you know, it's like a, it's a struggle that happens a lot astrologically through like having very, very strong fire in like earth houses. There's a lot of ways in which it manifests.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of like what we might call signatures, or like not signatures, but like themes, you know, that run through the chart in that way. And, but it's making me think like, you know, not that there's like, it's like kind of like a collect them all, you know, when we're sort of feeling hopeless, or we're just looking to seed hope, like are all elements present? You know, I don't do a lot of hoping from a cognitive place. It comes, it's like I skip the 11th house or something happens, you know, where I just like blank out, like I'm just not wired that way. But it's making me feel like, oh, okay, yeah, there's this kind of collection of elementals that want to be tended to, you know, and can you both be in the space of that realism or that earthy kind of the shapes of things? Can you be with the transcendent? Can you get everybody in the car, like pack everybody up for this journey? And, you know, it's really, and feeling like maybe, you know, partially like this cusp on the a sign of the 11th house is sort of the, I don't know, the wrangler of the people, you know, the figures who get into the car. Cause I'm thinking now, okay, I've got Virgo on the cusp of the 11th house, and you know, there is a way to be both transcendent. There's the witchery of Virgo. There's the kind of alchemical transmutation of the, you know, the magic of the mundane, but there's also a beingness in a body, you know, in that sign. And like, there's this hybridization that happens. And, you know, there's a kind of like witchery of hope that happens on the cusp of the 11th. And like, what kind of like hope, you know, whatever, concoctress, I don't know if that's a word, like, are you, you know, what's your sort of kind of formula or flavor? And like, can that be a sign that sort of brokers a deal, almost not brokers a deal, but somehow is able to be at the table of like getting everybody together to like get on board, because everybody's got to come with for hope, you know, it's, it takes everything. Yeah, it's really an interesting emotion or an interesting state that necessitates really like a full body energy body movement in a direction in some ways, you know.
Yeah. Oh, you just fleshed out like the end of the hypnosis for me. So you're doing great here, Bess.
Doing great. Glad I could be. That's why they pay me the big bucks.
Yeah.
So that feels like a good segue into the tarot snack that I have. And it's sort of a double, well, it's not really a double snack, but it, one snack sort of sets the stage, I guess, for the other one. And, you know, if you're interested and you haven't yet listened to our Major Arcana episodes, it might be an interesting time to go back and listen to Line 2, the second installment of that, because that's where we talk about the Death card and the Temperance card. But that's sort of the first place I started in the tarot. I felt like, wow, there's something that happens in the transition from Death to Temperance. And these are cards 13 to 14 in the tarot, ruled respectively by Scorpio and Sagittarius. There's something in that turn of the wheel, even if we think about the transition between those two signs, because in Scorpio, we get the ultimate in like, you got to fucking participate in cycles that are way beyond your control. You got to be available to organicize yourself, you know, to die and to re whatever. And then in, how do we get from Scorpio to Sag, where we're like, we got all the faith in the world, you know? And I was pulling cards virtually. I have like, you know, some app on my phone of Alana Fairchild. Do you know Alana Fairchild?
Sorry. Almost anyone you asked me about, my memory is so bad. Like,
yeah, I think you do. I think we've talked about her.
I'm sure I do.
Anyway, she's a lovely mystic creator of all sorts of oracles. And I forget which oracle I was, maybe I was working with her Rumi oracle. She has one that she sort of interprets the teachings of Rumi. There was something in the card that I pulled that basically was like, it was talking to me and saying, you have a sense, you have a strong sense and a knowing that this is your last time on earth in this particular way or something. There was sort of like a last chance energy to it. Hold nothing back. hold nothing back. And I was like, wow, this feels really like that energetic flip from the Death card into the Temperance card, or from Scorpio to Sagittarius. It's like we're holding, holding, holding in Scorpio, and then we can't really hold. And then we let, you know, be to beget the sense that we do have a centrality of the self somewhere that's not going to be lost. And then we flip into Sag, which in some ways to me is like one of the ultimate faith-based. Well, it ushers us into the final, you know, quartet of signs that are very faith-based, you know.
We didn't even talk about Sag in the ninth house. Jeez Louise. Yeah.
Jeez Louise. Jeez Louise. But yeah, it's, you know, it can just sort of be an interesting backdrop to think of, like, there's a certain, and it's not like, oh, just go for it or power through or whatever, but like hold nothing back. I don't know. There's something interesting to me about feeling that energy, feeling into the Temperance card, where we have to say like, whoa, that's one of the ultimate cards where we step into the flow of life. You know, after we learn that organicism of the Death card, learn to participate in natural cycles, you know, which feels also quite lunar, you know, coming back to the moon sign. But then the place I actually got for sort of a more active working with your deck, if you want to do that, was actually the sixes of the tarot, the four sixes, you know, in their respective elements. And the sixes are a quartet that connects us in the major arcana to the lover's card, to the number six card in the majors, which is ruled by Gemini. And there's a sense in the sixes, this kind of swirl that happens, it happens after the fives, which are sort of like that tightening moment where we're sort of bumping around against the walls. And then in the six, we have to sort of like cue the Celine Dion Titanic theme song, like, you know, my heart will go on, basically, and like come back into the flow of life and step back into the current and link arms with the parts of ourselves and the parts of life that we feel like we've got to push away from or that we can't bring along. It's that sense of bringing everybody with and following this kind of current. You know, it always puts me in the mind, the sixes and the lover's card too, of like, you know, stepping off, stepping out of your house in like a busy, you know, into a busy street or anywhere where we sort of like sink back up. You know, it doesn't have to be that you have to live in an urban area. You could, you know, dip into a river or let yourself be pulled by it or something where we're like, yes, I'm going to dip back in and I'm along for the ride. And so the four sixes, I think, could be interesting, you know, if you want to either feel into which one you are in right now or you want to, you know, pull them out of your deck or, you know, write them on the back of index cards and sort of pull one at random to see what's coming through for you. The six of wands is ruled by fire. And all of the sixes almost like feel like this kind of like montage to me of like this slow-mo, like joining back up with life again. And so if the six of wands was one of these montages, it's like, you know, you're like sort of climbing out of bed, you're going into the backyard and there's like a pool party or some sort of celebration happening. And how do you like sort of like kind of wake yourself up back into the energy of like participating in the party, basically. And it, you know, obviously it doesn't have to be a literal party, but this is a card of like syncing back up with what is available to be celebrated or what is available to feel exuberant in this moment. It's a card that's ruled by Jupiter in Leo. It has a connection to that kind of expansive property of Jupiter and that plumped up quality of Leo. You know, and then we have the Six of Cups. This sense almost of like, you know, I sort of picture this is sort of a card that sometimes gets associated with nostalgia, but it really feels like a reseeding of the heart, you know, after a breakage of some kind, after, you know, just any place where the heart feels like it's been bumped around a little bit, you know, in the fives. And then we're available again to be like, all right, you know, it's almost like this montage of like a holiday or something where you're with friends or beloveds or family or whomever, and you kind of link arms with them again, or you sort of like, you know, step in of like put your hand on someone. It's almost like after the feeling of like after a big argument, and then you just sort of reach out and like touch your beloved or touch your friend, you know, or sort of make contact again, make contact with your own heart space, even put your, you know, your hand on your own body in that way. You know, and then the Six of Swords, this quality of like stepping back into the fray of air energy, of growing and changing and expanding, this sort of vista point energy, you know, ruled, they're all ruled by the fixed signs. So sorry, I neglected to say the rulership of Six of Cups is by the Sun and Scorpio. And then the Six of Swords is by Aquarius. Now I'm totally blanking on what the planet is. Might be Mercury, might be Venus. Anyway, I think it's Mercury. Maybe not. And then we have Six of Pentacles, which is, you know, ruled by Earth. And this is like this kind of body reciprocity. This is like stepping back into the grain of the flow of like the natural cycle of the body, you know, like sleeping and waking and giving and taking. You know, it's a card that a lot symbolically has some sort of image on it where there's reciprocity on the image, where somebody is giving something, somebody is taking. There's like a flow of energy between. And so I think all four of these cards really help us step into the particular current again. That's that sensation of how do we get the pieces of ourselves on board to go with life, you know, to go in the grain of life. And, you know, we might see that from a different place in a different moment. So I think it can be interesting to sort of play with these four cards and feel into, you know, what that might look like for you.
That's so cool. You could almost like do a really just pull out those cards that you mentioned and do like a really cool pull for yourself to see like what kind of energy hope might be most available to you through or.
Yeah.
It's really, I didn't expect hope to be such an all encompassing topic.
Yeah.
It totally makes sense that it is, but I just didn't think of it. You know, like It's like, of course, humans with our big cognitive brains and our like, capability to think about the future and thinking about ourselves and our egos and all these things that we do, we have to have this evolutionarily speaking. Like we have to have hope or else we just wouldn't go on. You know, like,
yeah.
Like it's like almost like a big thing that we need, you know?
Yeah, it's maybe the biggest thing of all, you know? And it makes sense, like you talking about this arc of the 10th, 11th, 12th house, talking about these signs that are sort of far out in the realm. It's like, it's our biggest work in some ways here on Earth, you know?
It's like after we get ourselves situated in the, you know, first through fifth, and then we start to like get ourselves in relationship and the sixth through eighth. And then there's like, I should have included the ninth really in that whole like 9, 10, 11, 12. Cause of course, you know, that's why I said, geez Louise, like, of course, Sagittarius is like a big hope energy, but you know, we only have so much time.
Yeah. We got it in there with Temperance.
We did. That was perfect. And then it was so interesting to see Saturn as like a hope agent as well. Like the kind of the way you make it work on the ground, you know, probably has that function.
This kind of four elemental part, you know, we can play with that in a variety of ways. You know, you can play with that through the, you know, ninth through 12th houses. You can play with that through the six or the four sixes that are different elementally. You can play with it through, you know, your lunar principle and looking at where you're sort of wired and then how to invite in the other elements as well. You know, there's this, there's this kind of like real suite of energies that come along the ride.
Yeah. All right. So let's do a little healing hypnosis. You know, the way I present it here on the podcast is as a self-hypnosis style. So you can follow along now or you could take notes and then do this, you know, on your own later and you can adjust it. I like the self-hypnosis kind of angle because, you know, if I'm talking about being in water and maybe floating in a lake or a pool or an ocean and you hate the water and you're like, I don't want to float in the water. Like that makes me feel anxious. Then you can go and imagine yourself like lying on a field of like sunflowers or whatever. Well, that would be uncomfortable, but maybe a field of like clover and like, you know, or floating on a cloud or whatever works for you. So it's very like DIY. You can build this out yourself, you know, so with that being said, if you're not driving or commuting or, you know, if you're walking, maybe sit down and take a break. And the first part of a self-hypnosis is to do a little relaxation. So that can be done in a bunch of different ways. And if you listen to past episodes, I've described doing that in a bunch of different ways. There's many ways to relax yourself. But for now, I want you to just imagine the muscles in your face kind of relaxing and all the tiny muscles around the eyes and the cheeks and the nose just relaxing. And if it helps, you can take like a nice deep breath. And on the exhale, just relax through the shoulders and arms and let that relaxation continue to move down the body and you just continue to imagine each body part, muscle group, easing and relaxing and using your breath to help that along. So relaxing through the chest and the back, stomach, lower back. Imagine the hips releasing and the legs relaxing, thighs, knees, calves, ankles, and feet. And you can relax your mind as well by counting down in your mind from 5 all the way down to 1. Just the way you put a baby down to sleep, you go down 5, down to 4, down to 3, down to 2, down to 1. And the sensation of floating in a lake or in a pool, wherever you like to float, maybe you have all of these inflatable, floaty things to rest on, nice, comfortable, cushioned, soothing place where you can just be. You can be in the water, be in the movement, the gentle, relaxing, soothing, rocking, cradling movements of the water as you float. And in your imagination, you can give yourself a hug. You can really take a moment here in this very cradled, safe, comfortable place to just show yourself a little compassion, treat yourself like a precious object, shine a light of love all on yourself, light of love and forgiveness and understanding, nurturing yourself, taking your time. You can just nurture that part of you that needs care. You know what part that is. And you can even get a little closer to that part that needs care, that needs attention. Really nice hug. And you can wait here. In this wonderful, comfortable spot. You don't have to do anything. You have nowhere you need to go. You can just be in this space, taking as much care, as much time, trusting that a different energy will arise. But for now, you're just making time to take care. When the time is right, a beautiful rainbow of color can start to build, moving out of yourself and where you are, up and up and up. And when you're ready, you can float like on a conveyor belt up the rainbow, watching as wonderful things that make you hopeful begin to float by. A picture of something that reminds you of hope. Maybe images or sights or smells or imaginations or sounds. Fragments of ideas that excite you, that uplift you, bring you a spark of yourself, of your talents, of your gifts, of what you're here with. Maybe memories of hopeful times, things you've brought to the world, things you've done as you float up and up, this wonderful rainbow of light. Excitement builds. And a part of yourself that's your most hopeful part, and now materialize there to be with you as you move up and up and up, holding you, pep talking you, giving you glimpses of future possibilities. You can imagine what this part of you looks like and sounds like and acts like. As you continue to notice all these hopeful bits and pieces of images, ideas floating along with you. And now you arrive at a throne on a cloud, and you can sit with this hopeful part by your side. And in each elemental way, you feel yourself filled with hope. First with fire, fired up and sparked, lit up, you glow on your throne, ready for action, energy, creativity. And next with earth, as your roots grow from your feet down deep with security, with embodied trust in yourself, knowing that every time you've needed to try something new, you've always learned how to do it. You've always learned what you needed to learn at just the right time. You can trust in your resources. And with water, allowing the emotions and the flow of your being to be just where you are at just the right time, your creativity can surge as you take care of yourself. And with air sparking with new ideas, trusting in your ability to be supported by others, creating a wonderful world for all. And when you're ready, you can just open your eyes and be right here and now, counting yourself up if you'd like from 1, 2, 3, feeling energized, alert, and ready for the day.
All right. I'm just in a flamingo raft of forgiveness. Just, God, that was really fun. Making me, I feel like there's an undercurrent in this whole conversation that, of the idea of forgiveness too, that really hypnosis is brought forward. And now it's making me think, well, listeners, if you're interested and you haven't yet listened to our water episode, I think we talked a lot on that episode about forgiveness, and it feels like it's really connected to this conversation here today too,
That's so true and poignant. It makes me almost get a little teary-eyed. So much. And it's interesting too, because we think of hope as such a future-oriented thing, but forgiveness is such a past-oriented thing. And of course, they're linked.
Yeah. It's the whole coming with. My God, hope is the key to everything. I feel made a radical realization. Maybe it's not that radical, but it's past, present, future. It's all the elements. So on that note, we're both just going to go weep in a pile. But thank you so much, as always, for tuning in. We hope this was helpful. we covered currents. We covered coming with, flooding, feelings, forgiveness, all sorts of jazzies. And we hope that you'll tune in for another episode in a few weeks. And until then, may your rainbows be resplendent.